Good evening and welcome back to another session of the Laws of Life. Tonight we're examining the law, the divine law of cohesion. Our question will be, what is the divine law of cohesion and how can an aspirant best harness it? This is, as we were talking beforehand, this is not to be confused with laws of adhesion, which refer to 3M and scotch tape. This is the law of cohesion and coherency. I will do my very best to strive for coherency tonight, but I could succumb to the inverse side of this law and be incoherent. There's always that danger. And in fact, there's a almost certain likelihood that certain aspects of this will be incoherent. But we'll soldier on anyway. I've shuffled the cards and laid out a spread here. Our starting point is the Page of Cups upside down. The counter cup is the Queen of Cups upside down. The challenge is the Three of Swords right side up. The purpose is the Four of Swords right side up. The endowment is the Hanged Man right side up, although it looks upside down. That's why I was talking about coherency can't exist without incoherency. That's number 12 in the Major Arcana, or a 3. So it goes along with the Three of Swords and any other 3 that shows up. The Destiny is the Knight of Rods right side up. Both the Hanged Man and the Knight of Rods are right side up. And then in the Pillar of Revelation, we have, in the position of the real question, we have the Knight of Rods upside down. King of Rods. Can't have the Knight of Rods because he's the Destiny.
Right.
Can't have two cards in one spot, or one card in two spots, I guess. The Hidden Forces, Six of Rods upside down. In the position of the spiritual ideal, we have the Hermit upside down. The Hermit is number 9 in the Major Arcana. And in the culmination or the fulfillment, we have the Six of Pentacles upside down. And so that's what we have.
Two sixes.
We have two sixes? The Six of Rods and the Six mm-hmm. of Pentacles? Okay. And we have 2 3s, mm-hmm. and we have a page, a queen, a knight, and a king. So we have a royal flush. And then we have the 2 major cards. So we have 2 majors, 2 swords, 3 rods, 2 cups, and 1 pentacle. We have 4 upright cards and 6 inverted cards. This is a very interesting law of cohesion. It's not a law that you, or coherency, cohesion. It's not always a law that you can observe operating in daily life because it has a lot to do with the creative process. It influences primarily the monad, the Buddhic level, and the astral planes. Because it influences the monad, obviously we have 3 rods, so the rods are important and the mind is important. So we'll get to this. It definitely has a lot to do with the mind because we talk about coherent ideas and coherent speaking, describing those ideas or writing. And so as we organize our thoughts and our thinking on a subject, we engage in the law of cohesion. I have up on the screen a diagram I found on the internet, which I think illustrates cohesion. Notice that it's a stylistic hexagram right in the center, and then right around that is a reflection of that. And on the out, there are 6 hexagrams surrounding it. So the outer elements of it reflect the inner design. And this is a law that is going to and be very important for understanding archetypal patterns. Because as the monad creates and generates thought, it establishes the archetypal patterns, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But anyway, our starting point is the Page of Cups, and the Page of Cups is a confused person. We can tell that from the flamboyant but uncontrolled pattern of brown feathers coming out of his head. And he's wearing a hat that defies coherency. It's quite clear that his thoughts are unorganized, disorganized, incoherent, and he's constantly distracted by ephemeral things like bubbles or fish in cups. Hey, that could be an interesting fast food, fish in cups. Probably do well in Britain. But anyway, the Page of Cups, we have these two buds in the background, and those epitomize not only growth, but in this case, coherency. But the page, the learner, the young aspirant, is trying to work at the level of the mind, but his emotions is constantly leading him astray. So the problem of incoherency in our society and in our lives is largely due to the emotions, and the art of applying the law of cohesion is to install certain patterns of coherent thought. We'll get to this over in the Six of Rods, to organize everything. And the problem is that science, when it studies the laws of physics, is studying them way out here on the periphery. You see, if you look at this pattern of the image that I have on the screen, the hexagram in the center defines everything else in the picture. But if you go way out on the extreme, you can see these three little flares coming out from each nodule. Now, if you look at the nodule itself, it's another hexagram. But if you study the three flares, you might come up with the three flare theory, which has nothing to do with the internal hexagram, which was the progenesis of everything. So this is the downside, the danger of superficial observation, careless thinking, incoherent thinking. You come up with the theory of the three flames, or the three flame out theory, and you miss the whole point, which is that it's a hexagram, not three flames or flares. So this is the way humans limit their thinking. They stumble. They let their attention be distracted by irrelevant things. But the law of cohesion helps us organize our thinking. And it's not just humans, but this happens on a global level too. God, I mean, this is basically, for those of you who remember the Light of the Soul class, this is the epitome of holding your mind steady in the light. As long as your mind is being constantly distracted by the chitta chitta bang bang of the emotions, the chitta being mind stuff, then you'll never make sense of life. But if you go back to the hub in the center and learn to think from first principles outward, then you can control the mind and use it constructively. So this is a practical expression of the need to hold your mind steady in the light before you do any divine creative work. Because if you're doing divine creative work and you go to make something really important and you're distracted by a fish coming out of a cup, you will probably mess everything up. And then you'll be a messiah, one who messes things up. And that we don't want that. We want the right kind of messiah. So this is an issue of focus. Coherency gives us focus. It lets us focus on what's important. And in the case of the Page of Cups, it's not what's in front of them, it's what's behind them. And we often have to look in places we would never suspect in order to find what to focus on. We'll see this with the Four of Swords and the Hanged Man. The Four of Swords implies that the important thing here is the sword underneath the bier, underneath the platforms he is lying on, not the three swords hanging above him. So then we come to the counterpoint, the Queen of Cups. And the Queen of Cups brings in the issue of magnetism. This is, the Queen is filled, her whole torso is filled with radiant light. She's radiating, emanating light throughout her domain, her sphere of influence, her domain. And she's embodying the principle of magnetism. This is a expression of magnetic love, coherence. The love causes ideas to cohere and form around a central nucleus. And this is how we order life. This is operative for divine creators as well as for individual human creators. And as we establish themes in our life and add structure to our thinking, we are able to control our thinking and harness these patterns to express energy. The Queen of Cups is ultimately all about expressing energy. You can see all that electric energy flowing out of her head into her domain. And so she's stimulating the environment around her. She's vitalizing it. And this is an act of conscious control and the use of the magnetic force to attract that which will cohere and repel that which will not adhere. And so this establishes things. And then we come on to the card of purpose, the Three of Swords, which is basically three swords penetrating the heart of a heart, floating in midair above rather large forms of the residue of ancient evil, old forms left over from prior times. And the idea here is that as we continually hold the mind steady in these themes of redemption and goodness and wisdom and so on, we transform the obdurate resisting elements of ancient patterns, and we transform them into new ideas, new capacities to express the Queen's radiance. So this is the important work. As we constantly work, for example, in this country with the idea of freedom and find out everything there is to know about freedom and learn to express it and value it, we're gradually saturating the sphere of influence, which is that of the spirit of America, with the idea of freedom. And it becomes easier for people to respond to this. It becomes part of the racial characterization or the racial thought form that people grow up in. Now, of course, one of the dynamics here is that because we are a country that's constantly bringing in new immigrants and expanding our base, those immigrants from South America and other countries, Africa, whatever, come in and they don't have a magnetic attraction to freedom. They may never have heard of freedom. Their society may not be based on it. So they don't have the same innate understanding of freedom that somebody growing up in this country, born in this country, growing up and being bombarded constantly by thought forms of freedom, even if their parents don't teach them freedom or its value. They're responding to it. They go to school. They learn some things by osmosis. But somebody coming in, an immigrant coming in from Mexico or Ecuador or Brazil or wherever, doesn't bring in that basic responsiveness and doesn't have the idea of freedom or basic human rights to, there's no coherency in his character as a result of being brought up in that social milieu. So again, this is not necessarily, we're not necessarily describing something that is anyone is consciously aware of. It's more of a, more on the level of instinct, is such as the fish knows it's a fish because it has instinct to do that. The birdies that were recently born in the nest on our front porch and taught by their parents how to sing and how to fly, learn to respond to the instincts of their species without any great difficulty because of the law of cohesion. A very trite and cliched way of expressing the law of cohesion might be, in fact, birds of a feather flock together. They flock together because it's part of their instinct to do so. It's part of their DNA, if you wish, to flock together. And if you extrapolate from that concept the idea of focus, then we can stimulate growth in society the most rapidly by getting everybody to focus on the same kind of idea. It's what, in a primitive kind of not too effective fashion, the rabble-rousers talk about is raising consciousness. They're trying to batter down our resistance to their desire to change all the rules and traditions. But the principle still remains. If you repeat anything long enough or often enough, it forms a central hub and it becomes either a very real or a kind of mock archetype. When God does this, it forms the archetypes. When somebody else does it, when a human being does it, unless that's connected to archetypal force, it's probably just repeated nonsense. The cry and hue from our universities about Marxism is a good example of that. There's a certain coherency there, but it's just from everybody drinking the same Kool-Aid, not from thinking. So this is why it's so important to think carefully before we start focusing our mind, because the mind is a tremendous vehicle for coherency and cohesion. Now, the other aspect of the Three of Swords is the intersection of those three swords. And so we can presume that these are three different spiritual forces, quite likely the great trinity of life, appearance, and activity, or power, love, and intelligence. And they're coming together and creating a nexus or a hub, a nucleus, from which our growth stems or derives. And this is important because this law is a divine law. It applies equally at the level of the monad and at the level of the molecule. So if you can understand this law, you'll understand how a molecule keeps those electrons from wandering off out to Samarinda or someplace. And that's that was a private joke for Rose. Mm-hmm. We're reading the book, The Gilded Chain, by Dave Duncan, and Durandal, our hero, is off fighting monkeys in Samarinda. So in any event, it would keep everyone from wandering off to Samarinda, as Duncan has. But there's another element to this as well, and that is the whole idea of coincidence. What a coincidence it is that those three swords are all stuck through the heart of the matter. Actually, there's no coincidence at all. It's what swords do. They penetrate to the heart of the matter. And so we need to understand that the law of coherence frequently expresses itself through what seems to be coincidences in our life. And yet it's not a coincidence at all. It's the magnetic response of an activity that was initiated eons and eons ago and now bubbles up to the surface and draws its participants together in a seeming coincidence, but not if you can, in your mind, you can trace back and discover the origins of this basic phenomenon. Okay, so we have this, and then we come down to the purpose, and we have the Four of Swords. And the Four of Swords is a knight in less than shining armor. He's presumably dead, laid out on his bier. And there are three swords in the forming the pillars of the cathedral in which he's lying, or the chapel or whatever. And the fourth sword is down there on the side of his coffin and represents the unconscious, the subconscious. So again, there most often the law of cohesion is working behind the scenes and we never see it. We sometimes wonder what a coincidence, and then we take it no further. But this is one of the problems, is that we don't investigate, we don't seek out to understand the law of cohesion, or how the mind, just by thinking about an idea, draws it to you and all of the possible ramifications of it. We wonder how on earth could the Tibetan have so many brilliant insights into the nature of this, that, and the other thing, the distant past, the previous solar system. Where does he come up with this nonsense about a previous solar system? Well, by directing his mind on the subject of the previous solar system, he suddenly is filled with ideas and revelations about the previous solar system. That's how it works. I wondered myself, so I asked him. And that's what he's telling me is the way he does it. And so he does it through the law of coherency. A scientist could examine the nature of molecules this way. We can go back and see the relationship between Atlantis and today. We can go back into the to an earlier solar system and see its relevance to today. And we can do this because of the law of coherence, but we have to train. Most people's minds are like the page of cups, incoherent. The mind is not magnetically attract or repel ideas. And they're just a jumble. It's like a thrift store. Everything's brought in, but not sorted out. And there's little structure in which to hang different things. We've talked about this over this last week several times, about the structure of the mind, the importance of the structure of the mind. Every little spark of light of thought in our mind becomes a central point or hub through which we can then explore its world through the law of coherence, cohesion. The fact that mental energy is cohesive. It just as the molecules of life are cohesive. And this is what keeps everything from falling apart and disintegrating into dust. So then we come to the endowment, and here we have the hanged man. The hanged man is upside down, so it looks like the card is upside down, but the card is actually right side up. He's hanging from a cross, and he's tied to this cross by a rope that not only is part of what ties the crossbar to the cross, but also then extends up towards presumably the monad, which is his source of life and energy. And so our job is to always realize that the law of coherence, if we're going to be coherent, if we're going to understand ideas, we always have to trace them back to their source. Because there are a lot of ideas floating around in society that are incoherent because they have no connection to archetypal force. But if they have connection to archetypal force, then they will lead you to the monadic level, to the neutron, to the nucleus, to the center, the inner hexagram here, so to speak. And as you contemplate archetypal force and designs, you begin to understand the real source of anything. So you have to reverse your polarity here. That's what the hangman's all about. And understand the inner dimensions of the outer experience. The outer experience does not have any genuine coherency except to the degree that it orbits some internal reality. And so that's what this card is telling us, that if we just look at life as it unfolds in front of us, we won't be able to grasp these cohering principles. We won't be able to grasp the beauty of the work that God does, the idea that God does great work. We will be left off here on the periphery wondering what these three flares are and not putting them in the context of the hexagram that is their origin. So we need to, in order to work with the law of coherency or cohesion, we have to be able to understand that the source of our life is always spirit, and that we, the nexus of this crossbar on the cross is every bit as important to us as the intersection of the three swords in the heart. So from that then, an example of this is a lot of people worry a lot about right and wrong. But really, as I suggested earlier, I was semi-joking, but nothing, even if I sounded incoherent, it was for the purpose of being coherent. And the point is, that joke illustrates this point, that the duality is instantly reconciled if you understand coherency, because it's either chaos and incoherency, or it's order and coherency. And what appears in the physical plane to be incoherent and impossible to understand is just the illusion, the bubble of being out here on the periphery without the ability to sense the inner perfection. If you can trace any idea back to its inner perfection, you suddenly become lucid, clear, and coherent in your thinking, because your thinking is being stimulated by that inner perfection. All right, so this then takes, so an example of that, this is what I was getting at, an example of that is our preoccupation with right and wrong. Whereas rightness and wrongness is mostly a perception. As we know from the essay on man, whatever is right. So in order to understand rightness, all you have to do is trace it back to whatever is. What is the source of your thinking and your idea? That's where coherency occurs, at the source. And the mind of God and the mind of man, both are designed to work from that stable point where you can hold the mind steady in the light, that stable point of coherency, and then magnetically radiate your ideas outward through your sphere of influence and bring everything into harmony so that everything is, that inner hexagram is pouring out through, radiating through all the outer hexagrams. And if you study an outer hexagram, you will eventually be led back to the inner hexagram and know what you're doing. I hope that makes sense. It makes perfect sense in my mind, but I'm trying to coherently explain this so it makes sense in your mind too. Then we come to the Knight of Rods, and this is the card of the Destiny. And look at all that refined ancient residue in the lower right-hand corner. And his vest is made of the same refined pattern, which was probably at some point not terribly refined. So what we're talking about with this law is the conflict between chaos and organization. One way of thinking of that is chaos and coherency. The law of cohesion is that which the Knight of Rods, not the Page of Cups, but the Knight of Rods, who knows how to use the mind, uses to go forth and transform the chaotic residue of that's left over from earlier systems and incomplete creative work and so on, and refine it into perfect order, perfect, and hence we are able to create certain luxuries of living that almost anybody can afford, and we can live a life of intelligent investigation rather than a constant struggle for survival. And so that refinement is key to this. Our work here is to redeem, to initiate reforms on Earth, to organize chaotic matter so that it becomes coherent. And that's the design of man. That's what we do best. We do it best from the mental level. And that's why there's three rods here. This is the first of the three rods, is that we're on the brink of developing the mind so that the mind can grasp these inner truths of life. Not just what we can conceive of with the brain, but at subconscious and unconscious levels, as we talked about with the Four of Swords, and understand how perfectly the world of thought evolves and influences the world of form. And in fact, what we're talking about here is the law of cohesion. When understood at the highest level, it gives you a tremendous hint about the generation of forms and how to put forms together and how to activate them and give them magnetic vitality. So this is a very, very important law, not only for advanced humans, but also for gods in training, which may be the same thing. It also helps us understand how God operates. And he operates in perfect order, starting from the innermost part and then radiating outward magnetically. Then we come to any questions before I go on. Anybody? Well, I noticed I just finished talking about the destiny, so we're about to begin the Pillar of Revelation, so I wanted to pause and give you a chance to raise flags and ask questions. Any comments or questions at this point? All right, so be it. Let's go on to the Pillar of Revelation. We have the real question is the King of Rods. The King of Rods is a kingly soul. And it's interesting here, you know, he's got his helmet with the bird and the little miner's cap jewel on it. And then he's got his little skull cap here. And then his cloak is kind of a jester's motley robe. And see how it radiates out from the central point of his head. It radiates out in perfect patterns. In contrast to the radiance of the Page of Cups, which is basically just a downward pull of desire, and it brings the chaos of the page's thinking down into his emotional turmoil over and distraction by the fish. Whereas the King of Rods, is his mind is controlling everything here. And there, I see a tremendous similarity between that pattern of his cloak and the hexagrams that I have on the screen. He's learned to work from first principles and radiate those first principles and build on them so that everything he does in the final analysis reveals the first principles. And that's what God does. And it's what humans ought to be learning to do, but up till now haven't done so well. In some sense, the America, the as a nation, is an experiment in a group of people, we the people, coming together and trying to learn to create from first principles. Our first principles being the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And the question is, how well are we succeeding in maintaining the vitality and vigor of those first principles today, 230 years later, 240 years later? How long will we be able to keep this up? How effectively are we expressing the first principles of freedom in all that we do, and as we interface with other nations which criticize us and chide us for failing to do what they failed to do all along? And they do it without very much humility and no recognition of what we're trying to do. And of course, there's very little recognition of what we're trying to do in our own country either. So we come here to the real question. The real question really is, are we working from first principles? Are we radiating these first principles and basic building blocks of life outward through our life? Or are we just shooting from the hip? Are we doing this in a patchwork kind of fixer-up mode? Or are we working from the center, from the heart? So again, you can think of the King of Rods as the monad, generating archetypes. And then from that, the personality learns to respond to those archetypes. And as we develop coherency at every level, we become more effective in working with genius, more effective in building, more effective in drawing people together and leading them. But this is the proper use of authority of the mind. And there's this being the king, there's a tremendous sense of authority with this card. And so the real question is, on whose authority? What's your authority for building, for trying to reform? And this is the real identification papers. If you were working out at night as a freelance spook, even though you're a physical person, you're a boner, at night, you shed your physical body and you fall asleep and you become a card-carrying spook. And if you came along and found somebody doing something, the first thing you need to do is ask, on whose authority are you acting here? And most people will say, oh, on my authority. This seems like a good idea. And they're no more advanced than the Page of Cups. So they're claiming to work on the authority of their emotions. I don't like this. That's my authority. Well, I'm sorry, but you should stay away from people like that. They're rabble-rousers, they're malcontents, they're bellyachers. They don't contribute anything. They contribute mistakes because they're not working from the innermost levels of perfection or divine design archetypes. So this card is, on whose authority are you acting? And we should always ask ourselves, for example, when I teach, when I do one of these things, I always ask myself, on whose authority am I talking here? Am I just rattling on and making things up? Or am I actually connecting with ideas on the abstract mental plane and or higher, hopefully, especially if I'm talking about the monad? Let's hope I'm working at a higher level than that, because the monad is at the atmic level. So the idea here is, on what authority are you acting? Now, yesterday we referred to a number of fables from the hourglass. I want to read you another one here if I can find it. It's on page 15, it's a fable called It Has Risen. The day he died, a master baker whispered to his son the secret recipe for bread. And thus the son's success was assured, for the bread was renowned throughout the province. His competitors, however, were distressed that the son was continuing the tradition of the father. "That's not fair," they argued. "We too gain our livelihood by baking bread for the people. The recipe should be made common knowledge for the benefit of all." So they filed suit in a local court to force the son to make the recipe public. By a quirk of justice, they won. The son obeyed the court. But when the others tried his recipe, the yeast did not rise. They stormed back into court, protesting the son had deceived them. "I will prove I have acted in good faith," the son said. He set up his equipment in the courtroom and began to mix a batch of dough according to the recipe. The other bakers watched closely. When he had finished kneading, he set the dough aside to rise. It proved perfectly. The son turned to the magistrate. "In addition to the recipe, my father left me the right to make this bread. As any baker knows, dough can never be forced to rise. It needs the proper atmosphere. In the same way, no right in this world can ever be grabbed forcefully. It must be given and received in the proper atmosphere." So that's what we're talking about here. Do you have the authority to make these claims, to think these ways, to build this, to proceed with this project, etc.? And what is the authority? And what is the underlying basis of it? In other words, you trace it back, as we saw with the hangman, to at least the mental level, and find at that level what the lucid, coherent plan is, and what other ideas and attributes cohere to it. Then we come to the next card, which is the card of hidden forces and unseen influences. And we have the Six of Rods upside down. In fact, all four of these cards in the Pillar of Revelation are upside down. And the Six of Rods is a woman in pink riding majestically and triumphantly on a harnessed horse, carrying all of her rods. And this is a card that uniformly or most commonly refers to the control of the emotions by the mind, the wild impulses of the horse, the chaotic impulses of the horse have been tamed and restrained, and no longer is he controlled by animalistic impulses, but by the guidance of the rider, the soul. And so this is the card of controlling the random impulses, the randomicity, the appearance of randomness, which is false to begin with. There are no such things. And the insight that if you trace back even random appearing influences far enough, you get to the mental plane where it makes sense. Because again, the three flares down here at the base of the diagram that I have on the screen, these three flares here, may seem to be random, but if you see the whole picture, you can see that at every point on the periphery where the hexagrams touch, there is the same three flares. And so there's nothing random there, and far from being random, they all lead back to the inner hexagram. So what appears to be random to finite thinkers in the physical plane is anything but random, and the law of cohesion reveals the inner patterns and guidance and authority of that, the inner elements of cohesion, the inner elements that magnetically hold this idea together and give it life. So we're touching on a very significant element here, and that is that the law of cohesion gives the mind the tools it needs to achieve cohesion and coherence in the physical plane, as chaotic as it may seem at times, because there are still traces of chaos left in the physical plane. And so we need the ability, the understanding to know that the mind rules and imposes order and coherency. And So that's a very important lesson to learn and to implement. Then we come to the spiritual ideal, and that's symbolized by the hermit. Again, upside down, the hermit is a hoary old fellow with a long gray beard, and he's wearing a skull cap and a kind of a robe, and he's out looking. He's carrying his lamp like Diogenes. He's looking for one honest man, looking for truth. And, of course, he's looking for truth in the outer world, but he finds it in the inner dimensions of the mind, the higher levels of the mind, connected to the monad. And he explores it. So here the mind learns to explore structure, to create structure, to generate structure, knowing that that is the matrix then for imposing order on chaos and clarity on what might appear to be jumbled thought. Certainly, as we practice various forms of writing, such as poetry is a great example of the application of the law of cohesion, because the idea is to write a short poem, a stanza or two, that it captures profound insight and isn't just a stream of conscious prose-like look into one's own feelings, but is an organized insight and inspiration into the life behind the show, as Elizabeth Barrett Browning put it. So the study of poetry, the writing of poetry, is a great way to practice the law of cohesion and train the mind to work from the central point. Then we come up to the card of completion, the Six of Pentacles, and we have the money changer in the temple and his scale and his balance and the idea of symmetry. And in fact, symmetry is one of the synonyms often used for coherency. I don't think the Tibetan had that in mind when he coined the phrase the law of cohesion, because he was working, looking at this from divine perspectives. But this card illustrates symmetry with both sides of both the right and the left being in balance and trying to achieve equilibrium and find the balance that or the worth, the value of things. And so again, we're talking about structure, but this time a different structure than we saw in the hermit card. That was the structure of archetypal life. Now we're dealing with the structure of life on earth, the structure of finances, the structure of coins, the structure of any kind of barter or interaction that requires the establishment of worth and equal trade, the establishment of fair exchange. And here's a good example of the law of coherency, because thousands of years ago, any discussion of economics would have been basically just, okay, I've got 8 drachmas, you've got so many gold realities. How do we barter back and forth with different currencies? It would be at the level of money. Now we talk about this in terms of fair exchange. What's a fair exchange? Not just for money, but what is a fair price to pay for oil coming out of the Middle East or out of Mexico or wherever? What is a fair what is a fair compensation for telephone service, for internet service, for whatever it might be? And so we've moved from the physical dimension into the mental dimension, where coherency gives us a sense of fairness, a sense of balance, And again, we find the balance between the right and the wrong, as we talked about earlier. And this is what we're meant to do, is to understand life, to find the coherency existing in life and work from that level. That allows us to work at a far more powerful level and comprehension than mere observation. Okay, I'm going to stop there and take comments and questions, discussions. This is the law of cohesion. It's a key to training the mind to think coherently and then to practice expressing it and speaking coherently. And this is one of the challenges of human living. Comments and questions?
Carl?
Yes.
When I look at this symbol that you have, it also seems to me to be something like the emanations of the all previous mind looking from top down.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Well, you see, if you examine then the counterpoint card in this spread, the Queen of Cups, that reinforces the suggestion you just made and the insight you got. The emanations of the all beauteous mind radiate outward from a central point. And that's the way the all beauteous mind of God works. And absolutely there's a connection between that, and I'm sure there's a reason why the law of coherence or the law of cohesion came up during this week when we're talking about wisdom as an emanation of the all beauteous mind. But that's indeed the way divine life is set up, and far more subtly and powerfully than we ever imagined. God uses divine laws in his creation, again, from molecules to galaxies. The monad works in the same way. And our whole life is structured to enable us to become agents of cohesion. And for the average human being, this is learned through daily and weekly and monthly and yearly exercises in holding one's family together. The art of parenting is such that you hold the family together. Over the weekend, we watched a series that I don't highly recommend called Summer's Lease. It was kind of a pathetic story, but it was the basic concept of it. There was beautiful scenery and good acting by John Gielgud. But this family, this English family, leased a villa in Tuscany for the summer, and but their whole family was in the process of falling apart. The husband and the wife were not communicating well. He was trying to have an affair but not getting very far, and the children were all of an age where they wanted to go out and they thought they knew more than their parents anyway, which probably wasn't much. And so the family was becoming estranged. The children, of course, were all worried that their parents were going to get a divorce, and a very common phenomenon in modern society. But for the average human being, that's the holding one's family together in the face of trial and tribulation from either internal discord or external pressure can be a tremendous test of our capacity toward cohesion, to keep the family unit together. And the same thing at community levels in business. The effort to keep one's focus of contribution coherent or cohesive gives us direct experience in working with this law. And the more we understand the origin of this law and how it's so important in human creation, we begin to understand how relevant it is to any work of reformation. And so hence, when I teach the Enlightened Management Seminar, which is not terribly often, but when I do teach it, I always go back and start saying, the basis of your authority is the purpose of your enterprise. Let's define what that is. So I'm teaching people to think and using the law of cohesion, even though I never talk about it or describe it as such. But you see, we need to learn as human beings the importance of this law of cohesion so that we can propose intelligent reforms and not just become reactive to life like the Page of Cups, but to behave like the King of Rods. And that's an important step forward, an important lesson, therefore an important law to learn and infuse into your activity. Good point. Thank you. Other comments and questions? Anybody? Well, I've said what I need to say, and I hope it's been helpful and beneficial to you. We'll do this again with another law in a couple of weeks, but that's it for tonight. Thank you, and good night.